Welcome to Educate, caring activists, teachers for equity, the podcast about all things education and equity. I'm Jennifer Martin from the University of Illinois at Springfield. This is Season 2, Episode 1, Complicate. My guest today is Dr. Julie Hoffman. Dr. Hoffman has 15 years of education experience teaching in urban, rural, suburban, and alternative schools in Illinois. She earned her PhD in literacy from Judson University in 2018. She is a member of the National Council of Teachers of English and an active member of the Illinois Reading Council, including her involvement on the Rebecca Caudill Evaluators Committee, the Advocacy Committee, and the Obama Library Award Committee, which she chaired. Her passion for children's literature and young adult literature, fused with her interest in social and emotional learning, makes her a strong advocate for all students, especially the underserved. Dr. Hoffman values literature as a means to introduce students to resilience and hope.
We are on location, a first for Educate the Podcast. I'm Dr. Jennifer Martin, and I am here at the Highlights Conference in Pennsylvania with Dr. Julie Hoffman. Welcome, Doctor.
Thank you. I think that we need to call this session Complicate, because we're going to be talking about things that might cause discomfort, but are important to talk about.
I had no idea about this conference, didn't know anything about, now I knew about the Highlights magazine, but please provide our listeners with a context of what this is all about and why you dragged me here today.
Okay, so I have two answers, kind of, or in parts, two parts. The first part is about this location. So we're at the Highlights Foundation, which I think is in a town called Boyd's Mill, Pennsylvania, but the important part is that we're in the Poconos Mountain area.
So this evening after dinner, we had our first keynote speech. Could you tell us about our keynote speaker?
Edie Campbell. She is a YA literacy advocate, which is me blending the word advocate and activist. She's not really that, or she doesn't really claim that. She claims just pure activist. But I like advocate. Anyway, she started blogging back in 2006, and when she reads these books, her mind and her heart are focused on representation. In the past, and even currently, there are books that are published that aren't really representative of the community or can lead the characters to some devastating circumstances, and I think that she wants to make sure that especially our youth are finding books that have hope and that have a place that feels inclusive and safe. So that's her thing.
Who are some of the other faculty in the workshop?
Yes. So Debbie Reese, who is a recent American Library Association Arbuthnot scholar. She's amazing. And then we have the authors Paula Yu and Renee Watson here.
And these are people who are freely accessible to all of the participants.
Absolutely. They sat with us at dinner at different, and I believe that it was even intentional that each person, that they tried to split up among the tables so that good conversation was happening everywhere. Yeah, it's very intimate. The group, I think there are about 20 conferees is what we're called, the people who are attending the conference. We are conferees, and then the faculty would be those who are presenting, so there's six, and then people who work at Highlights Foundation all the time and keep everything running smoothly, which they do.
And so other than the intentional programming, there are some spaces that are embedded into the day where participants can go and take some quiet reflection time, or there's an art space where we're encouraged to create, or go to places to have conversations or even to go and work on our writing.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, two of the spaces have been used as completely quiet spaces. So we went on a little tour today and were shown one building that on occasion will be marked as quiet space so writers can come in without making a sound, and all you hear is a clicking of keys.
Right. They called it a hive, which I thought was wonderful.
Yes. And I think that's, so this conference that we're at, I think, is a little bit different than what usually goes on here.
Definitely.
I know that sometimes some of the workshops might be to get authors into their first few chapters if they're trying to write a chapter book or a novel. There are sessions for illustrators of children's picture books. There are sessions that just help you get into character and write deep characters that are dynamic and can receive instruction on how to do that and be part of a writing community. So we're definitely in a writer's space, which is kind of cool because we're looking at children's literature through it, that kind of the backwards lens. So we're looking at what are publishers doing and not doing. And I'm going to segue into a conversation about tonight and listening to Edie Campbell talking. She said that books are really, really tools and they're political and can be empowering for their readers. But then she made the point that these same books can also be disempowering for readers if they're not present in the book. And she talked about, you know, who is writing the books, who is represented in the books, but also who is not represented. And so really kind of kept shining the light on who are we not paying attention to, who is not here, why does that keep happening?
Mm-hmm.
And so rather than coming here to write, we're coming here to talk about what we're not writing or what's even being published, what's still being published that maybe should not be written.
We have a lot to talk about.
We sure do.
For hundreds of years, African Americans, in the attempt to dehumanize them, have often been characterized as monkeys, gorillas, and other types of non-human entities, but predominantly as monkeys slash gorillas. And in 2014, Philip Goth and his colleagues published a very important article called The Essence of Innocence, and we'll put this in our show notes, indicating that Black children were perceived to be older than their chronological years and thus more culpable for their actions. So that Black children, or Black and brown children, were not entitled to the quote-unquote essence of innocence. In conjunction, the researchers found that Black and brown children were often perceived as and compared to primates. And this is still occurring. So tonight, Edie Campbell was talking about how the negative image of the monkey still projects negative stereotypes about African Americans in children's books, and that this trope is super damaging and serves to perpetuate racism.
And it's fascinating that it's not fascinating, it's unfortunate that it is still happening. But one of the examples that Edie shared with us tonight and made the point that not only do we need to pay attention to children's literature that is being published right now, but as classroom teachers, as librarians, as parents, as grandparents, when we think fondly back at the books that we enjoyed when we were kids, we need to read them again. We need to reread them before we put them into someone else's hands,
right,
or in our libraries. Because one of the examples that she put in front of us tonight was Curious George. And she even said, who knows Curious George? And of course, every single hand went up because we all know Curious George and the man with the yellow hat. Edie then went through some different pages from some of the Curious George books, showing how the man with the yellow hat was kind of the white savior, where Curious George was seen as the black child who couldn't learn behavior, who couldn't behave correctly, who couldn't do all of the stereotypical things that would be put upon a black or brown child.
Well, I was transfixed by Edie's talk about Curious George because I remember loving Curious George. We had a huge stuffed animal of Curious George in our the library that I went to on a weekly basis as a child, and I have very fond memories of that. But I never went back and read that as an adult, or, you know, learning all the things that I have learned, and I wasn't taught to read by my parents with a critical eye with regard to race, quite frankly. At tonight's talk, Edie went through some of these pages, and one of the first pages she shows is George in Africa, quote unquote, like non-specific country, just Africa in general, happy and free. And, you know, the ignorant savage who's in need of being tamed and civilized, right, by the white man. And then there's some more harrowing images, which I didn't remember seeing as harrowing as a kid, but there is a picture of George in a bag looking very, you know, being kidnapped from his home and taken to an unfamiliar place. And then throughout that journey, he gets in trouble and he's always, you know, pulled out of trouble by these white saviors, whoever they may be, the sailors or the men with the yellow hat.
Yeah. Well, and then the picture another picture that she showed that was striking for me was in continuing one of the stories, George got in trouble and ended up in jail. So there's an image in this children's picture book of Curious George in a jail cell. And when I looked at it, I started thinking about our public school system and the pipeline to prison, and thinking about if Curious George is a intentional or not intentional portrayal of black or brown youth, that even that image shows still where we are at, where we're at as a country, where we are at with the systems that are in place that continue to perpetuate disparity.
And then in the end of the book, George ends up at the zoo, essentially in a cage, and very happy to be there, happy to be enslaved, happy to be in the cage. It's an allusion to the happy slave, the trope of the white interpretation of slavery.
Yeah. Well, and also a trope of the white interpretation that that black folks feel more comfortable and are happier imprisoned, is how Edie worded it. And again, in my whiteness, to hear something like that at first, I wanted to reject it. Like, no, that's not a thing. But it is a thing. It's a thing that our children see over and over again. And that was something else that Edie said, was that when she gave the example of the monkey being used to represent a given race, and how most of us in the room had at some point heard of that, and then asked the question, so where did we first learn that? And realizing it is in children's literature. It's in the books, and kids are learning at a very young age, indirectly, quietly, even silently.
And this book was written 80 some years ago. The images are the same. They have not changed. And Edie argued that children do not learn empathy from characters that are not human. So they don't learn empathy from reading books about animals. So why are we giving children so many books about it? I would think, just from what I've seen,
as a non-expert would be, there's more books about animals and films about animals. So what is that all about?
In 2015, the School Library Journal created an infographic to describe the diversity in children's books, or lack thereof. Only 0.9% of characters in children's books were American Indians or First Nations people. There were only 2.4% Latinx characters in children's books in 2015, and 3.3% Asian/Pacific Islanders, 7.6% African American characters. However, 73.3% of the characters represented in children's books were white, 12.5% were animals, or personified inanimate objects. Now, to compare this, we're doing a little bit better in 2018. So in 2018, the School Library Journal created an updated infographic. So characters in children's books, in terms of their diversity, in 2018, 1% American Indians or First Nations people represented in children's books, 5% Latinx, 7% Asian Pacific Islanders, 10% African Americans. In terms of white characters, 50% are white, 27% are animals. So in 2018, we have an increase in the animal and other characters, such as personified objects, and we have a bit of a decrease with the preponderance of white characters. So we have 50% white and 23% children of color, or characters of color in children's books.
Audience, we are at a conference that we chose to be at and spent a pretty penny, not just to register to be here, but also to get here. So the transportation, by the time that I pay my credit card bill, I will be
cringing. 62?
Yes. I was going to say cringing, but cringing and 62.
Same.
So my expectation was that everyone in the audience
would be on the same page.
Would be on the same page, yeah. Exactly. Would have the same passion for this work, would have the same mind for this work. Although as I'm processing this verbally, I'm coming around to something that I didn't have at first. So here's the deal. After Edie Campbell spoke, there was somebody in the audience who was kind of trying to
pouring water
dismiss the critique
of Curious George.
Yes, basically that primates as characters have negative implications and is derogatory toward black and brown children. So in the audience, there was a person who was trying to dismiss that, suggesting that they're the easiest faces to draw in order to put emotions on. Her point was moot, but her point was also trying to dismiss Edie's point. But as I'm processing through this, one of the things that I'm thinking about is the book White Fragility, which was homework for us. It was
actually they mailed us all a copy, which was wonderful.
Yeah.
I already had a copy, so now I could give a copy to a friend.
Yes. Same for me. My friend Rebecca sent me a copy back in the fall, which is the copy I have with me and read and have annotated.
White Fragility by Robin DiAngelo.
Thank you. But it was given to us, it was sent to each participant in this conference with the expectation that we would read it coming in ready to have the difficult and complicated conversations around White Fragility. So here's where I'm backtracking in some of my thinking, is that even Robin DiAngelo, who is a white author, makes the point that in this work, we need to recognize our whiteness. We need to recognize that no matter how invested we are in this work, we will continue to make mistakes because we can't know. I can never know 100% completely the Black experience because I'm not. Moreover, I will never 100% completely understand an individual's Black experience because I'm not that individual who varies from the next individual, et cetera, et cetera. Therefore, sometimes I am going to say things that while I might intend for it to come out nicely or whatever, the impact will be negative. And I need to own that. And I need to keep working on correcting that. And so when I think back at this woman's comment tonight, part of me was taken aback that we would even hear something like that at a workshop like this. But then another part of my brain is saying, of course we're going to hear things like that at a workshop like this because we have come to continue to grow.
Yes. And it was very, very clear how unacceptable it was.
It was clear to us, but I don't know that it would have been clear to me 5 years ago. And it certainly was not clear to me when I was 10 or 12. And obviously it's not even clear to people who are in charge of publishing. And so,
or is it?
Well, that's the thing, is that it makes it very, very obvious how
thick. I mean, if you've been told and told and told how mm-hmm. offensive this is, if you've seen the research mm-hmm. and the implications of this image, mm-hmm. if you've watched the film Ethnic Notions, by the way, please watch that. You should know better. If you're being told by experts, don't do this. Mm-hmm. Don't do it.
Right. And should know better. And the very fact that these publishing houses even are turning around and covering their ears, which makes it clear that the systems that are in place, not only for us to dismiss what we are being told, to turn around and...
Or dismiss us.
And forget.
You're being too sensitive.
Yes. The bottom line is that the systems that are in place to protect those who are ignoring it are thicker than the people who need to be protected from this, which is why we have to continue the work of disrupting the systemic racism. We have to keep doing the work to disrupt these systems and continue to call it out.
So we're back in the studio today to talk more about books. What is the term for books written by those represented in the book?
So the Diversity Jedi, which would include Debbie Reese and Edie Campbell, like I said, and also Laura Jimenez and some others who are on Twitter. So I'm going to give a hashtag. It's hashtag Own Voices. So OWN. VOICES. And a book that would be termed an own voice book would be a book that was written by a person who is representative of that culture.
And culturally responsive of that culture.
Correct.
So because one is a member of that group does not necessarily mean they will have an own voices book. They could be an author who represents stereotyped thinking of that group. So that's another added level to analyze.
Yes, to think critically about a book and make sure that what we're putting into our classroom libraries, into our school libraries, into our children's hands.
So the Diversity Jedi have created several book lists of represented and own voices literatures, and we will put those in our show notes.
Definitely, and check
out. It's a good place to start.
Yes. It's a great place to start and a great place to continue to check back to on the regular.
Absolutely.
Pernille Rip. So she is a blogger and and a powerful voice for kids and keeping things student-centered. And if we're keeping things student-centered, then when kids are going through awkward times, tough times, hard times, devastating times, if we can put books into their hands,
the
where
books they need.
The books they need.
The books that will help them.
The books that will help them. The
will
books
support them, that comfort them.
All of those things. We need to make sure we have those books for them. She also was talking about middle school and the beginning of high school as being the toughest time for a human being. Suicide rates are up. Bullying is up. It's a tough, tough time. And so when it comes to books, there are schools, there are administrators, there are people who want to keep some of the books with tougher topics out of our kids' hands. And Pernille makes the point, or she actually asked this question. She said, why are we afraid to put powerful books into our students' hands during such a powerful time?
We are Educate, caring activist teachers for equity. Educate would like to thank the following for their support of this broadcast: the University of Illinois at Springfield, UIS, the College of Education and Human Services at UIS, the Department of Teacher Education at UIS, the Center for Online Learning, Research, and Service at UIS. And a very special thanks goes to our sound editor and designer, Emily Bowles, Online Learning and Faculty Development Specialist at Colors, Center for Online Learning, Research, and Service at UIS. I'm Jennifer Martin. Remember, always err on the side of awesome.